Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weed All About It. I'm Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission. This episode, 57, or what I'm calling Better Wet and Cold Than Hot and Dry, will mark the last episode I recorded during the Tri-State Grain Growers Convention held in Spokane, November 8th to the 11th. If you've listened to all seven, it's a little like attending convention yourself, without the registration fee or the hotel bill. Of course, you won't get any of the socializing available at convention, and if you listen to episode 50, Voices from the Tri-State Convention, you know that's a major part of the reason folks attend. Bryce Anderson is a meteorologist with DTN, the Midwest juggernaut that is slowly gaining a foothold in the Northwest. Formerly known as Data Transmission Network, it's a subscription-based service for the delivery of real-time weather, agricultural, and commodity market information. It has its headquarters in Omaha, Nebraska. Anderson's more than hour-long presentation held a Ford F-150 load of information, but this little podcast can't take that kind of weight. So I listened through the whole thing a couple of times and have lifted those portions which I believe my listeners will be most interested in. I have done my best to include Anderson's complete thoughts on specific subjects, but the podcast includes a lot of edits, even if you can't discern all of the seams. You'll hear a question from the audience near the end. Prior to becoming an agricultural reporter in 1986, my weather education was sorely lacking. Oh, I could talk to weather forecasters and write a story, but I didn't have a deep appreciation of weather systems, let alone what causes them. My first exposure to the details of the weather came at a presentation by the meteorologist Art Douglas at Northwest Farm Forum. Knowing everybody is interested in the weather, and farmers more than most, I have made it a point to include conversations with meteorologists in this podcast. You can hear previous efforts by listening to Episode 10, The Elements, Episode 25, The Other Weatherman, Episode 39, You Wanna Talk Weather, and Episode 49, Let's Talk About Ag WeatherNet. Here in Episode 57, Anderson gives Pacific Northwest farmers reason for optimism with predictions of above-average precipitation through the spring, but coming in combination with below-average temperatures. And what is driving this weather? The Pacific Ocean, of course.
All right, as far as the Pacific is concerned, we have a weak La Nina going on in the Pacific right now. You've all heard about it, right? I know you have. And it is likely to influence both our winter and the spring conditions. Now, what is La Nina? This is my feeble attempt at Spanish, but the Pacific temperatures are running cooler than average. The equator region temperatures off the South American coast and then heading toward the international dateline are consistently running at about a negative 1 degree Celsius or minus 2 degrees Fahrenheit in early November. That is the threshold for La Nina. La Nina is the term given when those water temperatures out in the Pacific are at that consistent 1 degree Celsius or cooler level below average. Now, why do we think that La Nina is likely to be with us through the winter season? At the subsurface, from the surface of the water down to about 1,000 feet below the surface, those temperatures are showing a large amount of cooling as well. Now, this is different than a slide that I had last year. If you recall, a year ago, When we discussed the Pacific last year, those water temperatures were already starting to moderate at depth in the deeper levels of the ocean. They are not this year. There still is a pretty large area of that subsurface, and you know we're talking, my gosh, trillions of cubic feet of water that are cool and below average. It's going to take time for that to moderate. So that really supports the idea of La Nina being in effect in the Pacific. And I know you're asking, okay, that's interesting, sir. You know, this is the bathtub. What does that mean as far as what it does to our wind patterns? We'll talk about that right now. Southern Oscillation Index is how the Australians measure the effects of La Nina in the atmosphere, along with El Nino, of course. And it's a comparison of the barometric readings between Tahiti, the island of Tahiti, and Darwin, Australia, and way northern Australia, just about to New Guinea. When the barometer in Tahiti has a higher reading consistently than the reading in Darwin, the jet stream track goes from east to west, and that is a signal that La Nina is in effect. And this is how our DTN winter forecast is shaping up then for the Northwest. We are looking for abundant rain and snow. It's gotten drier here over the past, the end of the summer into fall. We think that that's going to be improving with some pretty big temperature swings. Farther to our east, seasonal snow over the northern plains and more cold, and I think that they're going to still have a pretty dry situation when it comes to their season next spring. The Midwest is going to have an extended winter, and that's the feature I want to mention. They're going to have a slower time getting field work started in the Midwest in 2018, in our view. Farther to the south end, California, south through Texas and the southeast, likely to be warm and dry, and I think that that warmer than normal could probably edge up even into parts of Kansas. In Nebraska, where I'm from, we're kind of actually on the edge on a lot of these trends. But the pattern for the Northwest looks pretty solid in our view for this winter. Now, as we get into spring, the atmosphere tends to have a memory. And it doesn't just completely change its character on the flip of a switch. So I do look for a cooler trend this spring. And we're talking here March, April, May. Than normal, but we could see a drier pattern develop fairly quickly over much of the area during the upcoming spring season. So that's how the spring scenario is shaping up in terms of the La Nina effect. Moving through the springtime, the ocean is likely to move through to neutral, but those atmospheric features can hang around for a while. In a typical La Nina winter, this is why our forecast for the Northwest is basically for kind of a cold season along with some above-average precip. So it does look like a cold and wet winter that we are going to have because in the Northwest, a typical La Nina winter has the jet stream just pretty much targeting our part of the country. Wet and cool in a typical winter. In contrast, farther to our south, in Texas and the southern plains and so forth, they are warm and dry. But we are calling for a wet and cool scenario this winter with higher amounts, above average, rain and snow. And we could have a snowy season with the colder pattern in this La Nina winter. I think that, well, particularly this winter, and then I think through early in the spring, I think the northwesterly flow is going to be more pronounced than a southwest with the way the jet tracks. So I look for a more northwest flow moving over the area and decrease southwest because with La Nina, that jet out of the Southern California area and so forth, that really weakens. It doesn't get as much energy as more of the northern component of the jet. Intra-season variability is a big thing, particularly in terms of rainfall, because when it rains and how much it rains are going to determine a lot of our fortunes over the next year and the next number of years. I think just back to last year with the falling number problem that we had a year ago. And that was with poorly timed rains at the wrong time and in the wrong amounts, of course. This year, we didn't have that, but we had some pretty heavy rains early. So the timing was a tremendous factor in that, and that kind of timing is likely to be more of a feature, not just here in the Northwest, but in my neck of the woods as well. The dependability of precipitation happening in general is not going to be as stable, likely, as we have been used to. And then with the warmer conditions that we have, it does lead to the potential for features like pests and fungus, diseases and weeds that we think of as being more native to other parts of the country, making their way north. So that is, again, something that goes on, and particularly with the disease item, that can happen just because of the milder environment and all that type of thing, if it doesn't get cold enough to kill stuff off. And you know what that's like, I'm sure. There's kind of a case study that I would like to cite, and that is in North Dakota. We have seen that the spring wheat area has definitely has had a switch from kind of being statewide for a crop in North Dakota to being focused more west of the Missouri River, from Bismarck and then Minot west in North Dakota. Now, I know that you can, you know, the cynic in me can say, well, of course, because, you know, there was a period of time when corn and soybean prices, particularly corn prices, were so high that everybody decided, well, the heck with this. You know, I'm going to start raising corn and, you know, take advantage of that. But environmentally, there's been a change as well. There has been more rainfall show up over that part of the world during the growing season, and it has led to more of a fungus issue and more of a crop health issue. And basically what it amounts to is that it's been more of a chore to raise spring wheat in the eastern half of North Dakota. And so it's not nearly as big a part of the plan as it used to be. So I think that's an interesting case, or an interesting example to bring before you, because that truly is something that you can, you know, kind of grab onto, and it does make sense of a lot of these calculations and all these graphs and that sort of thing. Now, I wanted to mention a few things going on internationally, because the world grain supply is large enough right now that it truly is affecting prices. It almost doesn't matter what crop we're talking about. There's a lot of it. The eastern Ukraine area is maybe not one of their highest production districts. Western and northern Ukraine are pretty good. But southwestern Russia, that's a big player in terms of their wheat output. They had a very good season this year for crops, and in fact, last year was a good season too. Did you know that a year ago in Russia, you talk about long-term changes and what they mean, did you know that a year ago in Russia, they raised more winter wheat than spring wheat? Think about that. More winter wheat than spring wheat in Russia. You know what the latitude is of Kiev, Ukraine? It's about the same as Regina, Saskatchewan. And so when you talk about that part of the world, it's not just, you know, not just heading over and going straight east. And I think of me, I'm in the high 30s latitude. But my point is that, you know, that really is quite a ways north. And yet they had higher winter wheat production. That requires, of course, you know, a season where the crop can go dormant and all that sort of thing compared to spring wheat. And that was not the case in Russia for decades. So anyway, right now they are having a drier spell in that southwestern part, you know, just around the Black Sea and then just north of Ukraine. So that is bringing some concern for winter grains. And in China, The northeastern part of the country is where they raise a lot of row crop. Southeast is rice and some wheat. And even their central areas where it's greener, indicating that precipitation has been a little bit more generous here lately. The central areas have still been a little bit variable. That northeast dryness is likely to continue through the winter, and we may see, getting out of the winter into spring, some discussion about China needing some rainfall pretty quick in order to bring things along for crop moisture. And then in Australia, Australia's a big wheat exporter, as you know. The wheat crop is going to be on the order of 20% below a year ago in Australia. A lot of that has to do with what's going on in New South Wales. That's what I have circled here on the vegetation index in Australia. In New South Wales, the rainfall has been well below average. They've had drought problems, and their wheat crop is not going to be nearly as good as they're used to. And the area that a lot of that circle is encompassing is an area called the Murray-Darling Basin, primary crop country. You know, that's about, gosh, that could be the best farming country they've got in the entire continent, the Murray-Darling Basin, and they are dry. Australia, again, is a big wheat producer. A large portion of their wheat crop goes to the export market. Maybe there's a little bit, like I say, a little bit of a shaving off of world supplies as we go through the balance of this year, the next 6 weeks or so, and then into early 2018.
With this warming trend, the global warming, do you feel like it's a man-made or a natural trend?
Well, there is a growing number of, growing amount of evidence that human activity has been pretty highly involved in the trends that we are seeing. And that does have to do with carbon dioxide emissions. There has been some study done that shows that without the human component, temperatures since the late 1940s would likely have been steady or even maybe a little bit cooler, because solar activity, as we all know, has been basically flat. We haven't seen a great increase in solar activity for that period of time. So if you remove the human element, the temperature pattern would not have been as pronounced to the warmer side as we have, and the evidence continues to mount up in that vein and in that conclusion. How about warming in terms of what it means to what we do, which is raise crops? Well, by the end of the 21st century, with the trends going the way they are, and this is, of course, kind of doing the very dangerous thing of assuming, but it does offer an illustration. By the end of the 21st century, we could see the number of frost-free days in the Northwest move to 70 plus. We could have 70 plus frost-free days in the Northwest by the end of the 21st century. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because it does mean that we would have a longer growing season. So there's like I say, not just a harbinger of doom type thing going on here. Longer growing seasons offer, obviously, a chance to have crop decisions that require a little bit of a longer time frame. On the other side of that, there are a couple of effects there. With a longer growing season, you also have warmer temperatures that lead to more evaporation of soil moisture out of the soil profile. So this is a little bit of a trade-off that goes on, and it's maybe a little bit of a caveat in terms of what the impact of warmth might be. If you ask me, okay, Bryce, you're showing us this information. What is your biggest takeaway from what we are looking at in terms of how it could affect agriculture, not just here in the Northwest, but in the Midwest and in the plains and whatnot? My biggest takeaway is that the water supply is going to be challenged the most with what we're seeing. Now, it doesn't mean that we can't be successful on what we do, but it does mean that the water supply is maybe not going to be as dependable as we think about. Another feature that, again, by the end of the 2000s, with conditions being conditions showing the types of increases that we are seeing, is that hot nights are likely to increase to between 50 to 70 in terms of their number in the Northwest. And by hot nights, I'm looking here, or I'm meaning here. This is research that's been put together by Dr. Jerry Hatfield at the USDA research facility in Ames, Iowa. With the hot nights, those are nights where the minimum temperature is higher than 98% of the minimum temperatures between 1971 and 2000. So that's a pretty high benchmark, but again, between 50 and 70 hot nights. And you can see that over much of the continental U.S., that type of feature is a possibility by the end of the century.
Anderson's observations about the warming planet and man's contributions to it may be settled in his mind, but I think there's still a lot of farmers who question that particular detail. They can see the weather is changing. They just believe the climate is going to do what it's going to do regardless. Myself, I think it's better to be safe than sorry. That's all the time we have. I hope you enjoyed episode 57, or what I called Better Wet and Cold Than Hot and Dry, about Bryce Anderson's presentation at the Tri-State Grain Growers Convention on November 11th at the Grand Hotel in downtown Spokane. I hope you'll join me again next time for another episode of Weed All About It!
We love the land. The farm's our career. But make no mistake, we do not steer. Mother Nature's in the driver's seat. I'm talking life, and I'm talking wheat. We're riding shotgun and we have our say, but Mrs. N, she points the way. We feed you.